Good afternoon, fellow patriots. This is Matt Shea, broadcasting live from the future capital of Liberty State, Spokane Valley, or maybe somewhere else, who knows? I hope that we have a vigorous debate about that, but nonetheless, we need to press toward Liberty State because this is the front lines in the fight for freedom and liberty, where we are at in Washington State, traveling all over the country. I have seen that in the last few weeks and months. That we really are. We are on the front line, and what happens in Washington State could very well determine what happens in the rest of the country. A lot of you already know that. But back to the formal part of the radio announcement, brought to you once again by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action, and about Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, the kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed. Nor will they say, look, here it is, or there it is, for behold, the kingdom of God is inside you, or in some translations, in your midst. By the way, if you don't know who Stan Monteith is, go look him up. And not just a Wikipedia page, because Wikipedia pages are notoriously inaccurate. But go look him up. Find out what he was about. The man had a 24,000-volume library. You heard that right, 24,000 volumes. And a friend of mine asked him one time, have you read all those? And he stopped as he was touring this library. He turned to my friend with a very incredulous look on his face and said, of course, and then walked back the other way. That's how smart he was. He understood the forces of darkness that have been coming against not just the United States, but Western civilization for millennia. And he understood that this goes back even farther than that, back even before Alexander the Great, and that what we are facing in this time is nothing new, but how we choose to face it. That always is the determiner. It is the determining factor. It is what makes the character of a generation. And that is what we're seeing today. We are seeing an outright assault on our constitutional republic. We are seeing massive hypocrisy on the left. And it doesn't matter that the Marxists are being exposed. They just double down on their lie and then they try to project onto us. And thank God Attorney General Barr and several others are starting to really get it. Devin Nunes of the Intelligence Committee actually said it on Mark Levin the other night. They project onto us how they really are themselves. He's actually getting it. This is their strategy, their tactics. You know, I'm really wondering if the church is really going through the beginning stages of a revival right now. I want to be careful saying this. And I'm not talking about many of the established denominations, all right? I'm talking about a revival that isn't really based in the church. Similar to what happened actually in the Great Awakening, the first Great Awakening, that's kind of a similar idea. It was more about ministries and circuit riders going out into the countryside to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because right now, if the church does not wake up and realize that by not being involved in the political realm voting and educating themselves, that they quite literally, the church quite literally as a whole, is failing to abide by the commandments given to us by Jesus Christ to go out and preach the gospel to all creation, to make disciples of all nations, teaching them how to obey his commands. The voter turnout here in Spokane County was atrocious. And people wonder how socialists get elected. That's how they get elected. They'll fake being conservatives. They'll come on, they'll fake it. Even though they're directly connected, and the evidence is there, they're directly connected to Marxists and Marxist organizations. And even in some case, what I would consider a terrorist organization, Antifa. And people didn't get out to vote, so they just go ahead and, you know, let them win. This happens all over the United States. And it's not just the more well-known races. It's also the smaller races like water district and sewer district races. These Marxists have infiltrated everywhere. And they're unashamed about it. They have their own Marxist associated voter guide. And instead of disavowing that voter guide, they embrace it. And people are wondering. And look, at most elections are only decided by a couple thousand votes. You're talking about 3, 4, 5 churches showing up in the off season, in the off year. Everybody wants to show up in the presidential year. And to the people who say that their vote doesn't count, that is not just cowardly, okay? It is unbelievably false. It's unbelievably false because you're not called to worry about whether your vote counts or not. Your duty in the church is to go and vote. Because if you're not, you're not living out the commands of Christ in every area of your life. You know, and good people are putting their lives on the line, quite literally, and their careers, to run for office, elected office. And in the atmosphere perpetrated by the Marxists in America today, these people are putting everything on the line. The least anybody out there could do is go out and vote. And we're missing history of what is happening. I'm going to go through this, especially in South America right now. Mexico. Because people don't understand the history. So I'm going to go through that briefly here in a couple minutes. We are at a dire crossroads. And hear my voice, please. Courage sometimes is doing the very simple thing of just getting up in the morning and doing your duty, even though you don't know what the outcome is going to be. We are supposed to leave the outcomes to God. But right now, the church isn't even on the battlefield. It's not even showing up to the game. You have Christians that are losing their businesses in America. Christians that are being overtly persecuted in America. Their lives are being threatened. Their families are being harassed in America. And more importantly, in our community, in Spokane County. Be encouraged that God has control, but he is expecting us to show up. You know, that's the great part of the system. Show up. I mean, it really is not that, you know, big of a deal to circle on a ballot. You know, fill in the little circles and send it in. Isn't our liberty, our republic worth that simple act? I hope so. And have the conversation with your family at Thanksgiving. Do your own research. Talk to the people that know what's really going on behind the scenes. And live your Christianity beyond the four walls of the church. That brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front, Kashmir. All right, Kashmir is an area in between. It's at the base of, it's part of the Himalayan Mountains, and adjoins or abuts Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. And primarily, India has had a claim over Kashmir. And there's a great article by a former Indian general, an American thinker, called The Kashmir Endgame. It's published here recently. But it lays out a great history of Kashmir. Now, I've talked on this show about how Kashmir sits right dead center of where the Chinese want to build the road rail network over the Himalayan Mountains down to a port in Pakistan to bypass the Straits of Malacca. The Straits of Malacca is where most of the Chinese oil flows through, actually goes through on ships. And so they want to bypass that for strategic reasons. Now, India, on August 5th, 2019, canceled Article 370 of its constitution. And what that had the effect of doing is saying that Kashmir now belongs to India. They moved troops in. Now, a lot of people have said India should never have done that, but their patience really has run out because Pakistan, for several decades, has been sending terrorist groups and supporting terrorist groups in the Kashmir region. And everybody that understands this area of the world pretty much agrees with that if they're educated. This area of the world is truly and has been a flashpoint. And it's not just about this extremist activity there, but also it really shows the character of the countries involved. So India had beaten Pakistan in a war pretty soundly. And according to the Shimla Agreement in July 1972, India returned 93,000 prisoners of war that had been captured in that war. Even though the military victory was decisively, they acted very magnanimously. In addition to that, the Indus Water Treaty, which was signed in 1960 with Pakistan, allowed for legitimate shares of the waters of the Indus River. And interestingly enough, despite Pakistan continuing this kind of proxy war in Kashmir against India, India still honored that water treaty when they could have shut the water off on Pakistan and used it as a political weapon. So this gives you an idea of that area of the world. And it's not to say, you know, make things super simplistic, but it is to say that right now the change that is happening in that area of the world, I think, is indicative of what the next 20 years are going to look like, where China is going to continue to expand, is going to, just like Russia did, going to continue to ally with Islamist regimes in the world. And other countries are going to try to resist that. And you might actually see India's economy boom because manufacturing may be shifted away from China. All right, also on the international front, Venezuela, Chile, Bolivia. Unrest is happening down there. Marxism is on the move. You have Marxists that are trying to create chaos in those countries to bring those countries down to a level where suddenly a dictator implements more Marxism and more socialism, because some of these countries already have socialist regimes. Why would unrest in South America be any concern to the United States of America? Well, for a couple reasons. First, there is a pattern that is occurring down in South America where the media will side with the Marxists. There will be violent protests, where there will be burning of property, physical violence, and that general unrest serves to keep the people poor instead of prosperous. Businesses begin fleeing, people begin fleeing, and it spirals back down into poverty. Interestingly enough, you see some very eerie similarities starting to happen in the United States of America. That's why it matters. The Marxists are on the move, and this unrest that is happening in these other countries, okay, is not just happening in a vacuum. There are coordinated international Marxist forces that are looking to see what works in these other countries, and then they want to bring it here to the United States of America. Understand, this isn't just something we can ignore. And if you really want to know what's important, look at what the media is not, the mainstream media is not reporting on, like Epstein, for example. All right, also on the international front, Israel. In a very interesting move that has some bigger ramifications than anybody could possibly understand, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, according to Debka File, announced on Monday that the U.S. repudiated the 1978 State Department's opinion that civilian West Bank settlements are inconsistent with international law. In other words, they are recognizing that there can be Israeli settlements in the West Bank. In addition to that, Debka File's analysis is that this step by the Trump administration could help break the deadlock between Netanyahu and Benny Gantz. Wow. Very interesting. And by the way, their coalition, attempt to build a coalition government under Benny Gantz looks like it might be failing right now too. So, keep your eye on that part of the world because there's some other things that this could impact. It could impact archaeological digs, for example. Just pay attention. All right, National Front, impeachment. Okay, so the witnesses are agreeing that they don't know of any crime that's been committed. The witnesses are relying mostly on hearsay, most of the witnesses. One of the witnesses, well, actually two of them, tried to say that the president was using an irregular channel for foreign policy. I want to hit that nail right on the head. Let me back up. The Constitution says that foreign policy is vested in the president of the United States, okay, determining that. All right, now, there are foreign policy issues that the Senate does, but he is determining foreign policy and how it is implemented and executed because he is the executive branch, okay? If the president was involved in the conversation, it cannot be an irregular channel. As a matter of fact, in law, it cannot be. So these people that are saying that are just mad that they were bypassed. These career bureaucrats were bypassed. And oh, by the way, if you actually talk to Ukrainians, they understand what was going on in their country because the State Department and other organizations were coming into Ukraine and trying to change their social policy on LGBTQ and the transgender stuff. Things that are really antithetical to Ukraine, the values, traditions, and culture and heritage of Ukraine. In addition to that, it was interesting that Ambassador Taylor particularly talked about that the younger people in Ukraine wanted to become part of Western institutions. And what he meant by that was the EU. And it's interesting, people that I've talked to in Ukraine don't want to be a part of the EU for the exact same reason, because the EU is trying to put strings on the money that is being sent to Ukraine to make them abandon their values, tradition, culture, and heritage, just like some of these Ukrainians were saying the former ambassador to Ukraine was doing. So This is fascinating because really what this is about is they were trying to undermine Trump's policies. Trump went around them, as he should have. And now they want to try to use that as a basis for impeachment. Total sham. Stand with the president. You and by the way, you can disagree with Trump, but this is an attack at the heart of our system. Because if they can do this, then the true rooting out of corruption can never happen. Understand that. That's what's at stake here. All right, also on the national front, Antifa apparently ramping up recruitment in anticipation for 2020 and expanding some of its network. A threat video came out with somebody supposedly with Antifa action on YouTube, effectively threatening anybody who's a Trump supporter that if you don't renounce your support of Trump, that they were going to come for you once they had the ability to do so. AKA what Marxists mean by that is line you up against the wall and shoot you. And he had a bunch of violent imagery in the background during this video too. You can watch it. You can see it online. Also on the national front, CARE. Nihad Awad, the head of CARE, an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest successfully prosecuted terror financing trial in U.S. history, came out and specifically said his goal was to recruit 30 people to win for Congress. Now, this is after there was supposedly over 100 members of Congress publishing a letter in support of CARE. So add these numbers together. Let's say it would be 130. What Nihad Awad is trying to say is that an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terror financing trial in U.S. history, successfully prosecuted, wants to be able to have enough members of Congress to elect leadership because it only takes 110 members of Congress to elect leadership. Understand the implications of that. Also on the national front, I want to pull this one up here. This is one of those interesting things. And actually, you know what? Let me back up to impeachment briefly again. This was an interesting thing that got missed. Center for Security Policy has the article. Attorney General William Barr gave an interesting address to the Federalist Society. He labeled the people going after President Trump as the resistance, attempting to sabotage the functioning of his administration. Now, understand, resistance is a term used in the military to describe an insurgency, okay? So what we're seeing here is the Attorney General of the United States recognizing very publicly what is happening in this country. All right. I also want to talk about this very quickly. These undercover journalists that went in and exposed Planned Parenthood for buying and selling baby body parts lost, and Planned Parenthood was awarded almost $2 million. So I'm sure that that's going to be appealed, but those people that were standing for life, this judge wouldn't allow some evidence in and just really took a wrong view of the law in this particular case. So an interesting turn of events there. Please pray for those folks, especially kind of the, I'm not going to say head, but the guy who really has had most of the attention pinned on him, David Daladian. All right. Also on the regional front, I'm going to skip down to this very, very, very quickly. We have something very interesting happening here in Washington State. Seattle is suing to try to throw out the vote on I-976 over $30 car tabs. In other words, They weren't satisfied. Downtown Seattle wasn't satisfied with the vote of the rest of Washington State. And so now they're trying to override it with the will of the people of the city of Seattle. Seattle's mayor, quote, "We're suing to uphold the will of the Seattle voters," end quote, as if there's nobody else in the state. Tim Iman fought against all odds. $5 million thrown against Tim Iman in that initiative and really thrown against all of us as the people. We still won. And now they want to overturn it through the court system. In addition to that, and very interestingly, you have this weird statement coming out from Seattle. I want the Seattle Times talks about a Seattle lawmaker back in 1937, A.W. Clark, who talked about, get this, King County leaving Washington State. So now what these guys at the Seattle Times are saying is that the rest of Washington State is now meddling in the business of King County, and now they are actually advocating the state of King, quote unquote, to achieve, and this is the title of the article, it's unbelievable, to achieve the mass transit dream, it is time for King County to go it alone. The Seattle Times is now advocating for the split of Washington State. Amen. We will take it. So now the Seattle Times, after slamming me and everybody else, is actually advocating for the split of Washington State. About time Liberty State is made a reality. All right, last thing. This one, to my great smiling, I was stunned by this. So the article by The Guardian a long time ago, they tried to put out this hit piece against me. Well, they put out a new one, but inadvertently they published the full, because what these guys have been doing is only publishing parts of file folders and documents and cherry picking this stuff. So when the whole thing's published, then they're debunked. Well, they actually inadvertently published the whole transcript of this text string, in which it proved conclusively that we're not racist. And by the way, you can't really prove a negative like that. But anyway, they inadvertently proved our point. Great article out in Readout News about this. Check it out. The mainstream media caught lying and obviously not censoring themselves enough. Hilarious. They got caught doing it. And now, conclusively, their lies have been exposed. And so what else have they been lying about? Well, a heck of a lot. And when all of it comes out, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because don't hold your breath for an apology, by the way. It's not just about attacking me or the president. It's about attacking all of us that believe in freedom and liberty here in this country. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us and sending us those nice texts and emails. Thank you, everybody out there. It means more than you could possibly know. Remember, this is a listener-supported show. You can go to VoteShea.com. Also, you can find Patriot Radio on iTunes and Podbean. And if you get a chance, share with your friends and family over Thanksgiving. And get them to go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And that, I think, will do more to change America than anything, any TV program or even radio show, are those personal conversations, hard conversations over Thanksgiving. All right, my guest today is John Guandolo. The great one from Understanding the Threat, doing more than most Americans at exposing what's actually happening and working constantly, nonstop. He's super hard to get a hold of because he is sticking up for all of you. John, thanks for joining me on the radio show again. It's great to have you back.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for all you're doing for spreading liberty and the truth. Appreciate it.
How are you? How are you holding up with all the, I mean, you've been busy out there. You really have been.
We're definitely busy. We're definitely constantly in the battle, taking some rounds and firing many more downrange. I would say we're doing very well, and we are starting to see with the efforts of our team and the citizens that we work with at all levels, we're starting to see momentum building at the very local level, and it's kind of an exciting time. I think as you've described on your show, liberty really does begin at the localest of levels in the family. And we're seeing that. We're seeing communities around the country who have an understanding of what's going on and are trying to build a foundation at the local level and take the fight to local officials and others who are either doing nothing about the problems or actually aiding and abetting, Marxists and jihadis in their communities. And so people that are paying attention and wanting to learn and allowing UTT to train and educate them are understanding the problem and getting fired up. And I have to say, for instance, recently we've had a number of instances. Just today I spoke to a very small, influential group of people, and they, surprising to me, it didn't take much to get them to understand the problem, and that's something very different than a few years ago. People now understand that Islam is a problem, and they understand that there are Marxists who are directly supporting them and aiding and abetting them. And one of the comments I got from my discussion with them was one of the gentlemen who has served in the intelligence community previously said, "It was nice to hear you use the word sedition, because that's exactly what this is, sedition and treason in many cases." And so people are getting it, and people are wanting solutions and understanding the threats offering them. So I'm excited about what's going on. We're in some really difficult times, but there are some bright lights.
Well, I really want to hone in on this a little bit. UTT is the only organization in America providing tools to leaders, police, citizens, etc., to identify and dismantle not just jihadi but Marxist terror organizations. And this is key at the local level. If you could, because we have a lot of folks around the Inland Northwest that listen to this show, if you could, what exactly does that mean? What do you provide to leaders, to the police, and to citizens that can help them do that? Because I think you're right. There's a lot of folks out there that are waking up. They just don't know what to do right now.
Okay, so I'll try to do this as succinctly as I can. Let me break it down by the groups you just mentioned. So, for instance, for police, one of our programs that we run is a three-day program for police, first responders, National Guard, folks like that. And what we're able to give them are tools to, number one, research, map out, and identify not only organizations, but individual jihadis. We actually have some tools that we give police so that they can proactively find jihadis using means that police have, and because of the way that the jihadis operate. So, for instance, you can obviously find them through using evidence that's already been established that certain organizations, like the Muslim Students Association, is a Muslim Brotherhood group whose stated objective is to overthrow the government. Properties owned by the North American Islamic Trust in your community, going to county property records. Organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations, which evidence demonstrates is a Hamas organization. Islamic societies that are subsidiaries of the Islamic Society of North America, a Muslim Brotherhood organization that directly funds Hamas, those kinds of things. And it gives them, at a minimum, reasonable suspicion, if not probable cause, to open up investigations and use investigative techniques to begin looking at these organizations. The fact that if an organization says it's Sharia compliant, well, then if it accepts zakat payments, and they say they're Sharia adherent, well, Sharia requires that at least 1/8 of all zakat goes towards Islamic jihad, which U.S. law and many state laws call terrorism. And so, therefore, they're funding terrorism, so you have probable cause to believe they are. So you can open up investigations. The result of that is that in several states that we're working with police and have trained them, they have initiated numerous investigations. And in some cases, like in Arizona, Louisiana, they've actually convicted jihadis in a number of different cases. And so that's one impact of what that looks like. So whether we're talking about tactical solutions, whether we're talking about investigative solutions, it's not just terrorism matters. Drug matters, gang matters, because we're showing them things that they're coming across every day, but they don't know they are. And when we give them the information, then when they're out on the streets, they see it. Many of them will report, hey, we've experienced what you're showing. We just didn't know that this was linked into this, to you know, terrorism matters. So that's for police and first responders. That is a little taste of that. For elected leaders, I actually believe that speaking truth about this is an election winner, because I think Americans who are, you know, good people that want the right thing done, want to protect America, if you speak truth about it, they're more likely to stand with you. But you've got to articulate it. So what we do is we give people tools to articulate it, because you hear all kinds of kind of blanket statements from people that are not productive, one way or the other, like Islam's awesome, no Muslims are bad, which is absurd, or that, you know, we ought to, with all Muslims, we ought to fill in the blank, and that's not necessarily helpful either. But when you can articulate that the problem is Sharia and those who adhere to Sharia, which is a violent, barbaric ideology and doctrine, and you can go to an Islamic school in your community and see that they're teaching the things about Islam and the requirements of Islam that ISIS and Al-Qaeda teach, we can say, well, that's not welcome in our community, and we have legal means that we can use to shut your school down, and you're done here. But that takes courage. And so the two things we've seen around the country that are needed is knowledge of the threat and courage to do something about it. And I want to say that the other side, the jihadis, and especially suit-wearing jihadis who are working at the local level with your school boards, your chambers of commerce, your mayor, your police chief, your local business councils beyond the Chamber of Commerce, and others, they are, and by the way, with your state legislature, like the Turkish American Turkish organizations that are either Gulen run or Muslim Brotherhood, that are, for instance, taking state legislators overseas to Turkey. It's a total propaganda. All of that pushes our local leaders into ignorance or a false understanding of the problem. So what Understand the Threat does is shows them, okay, here are the organizations in your community. Here's how they're operating. And so we're able to give state legislators legislation to protect the state and the citizens in the state. We're able to give local school boards people, just talked to a gentleman today who went through our one-week train the trainer program, and they actually have had him, his local county, he has reviewed two social studies books in the local school system, and he's written critiques. And they asked him to write, they gave him another book and said, we'd like you to critique this one. And he's actually using the legal system, the state law in his state, to demonstrate how what's in the book violates state law because it's untrue. And what they're also, and it literally, he's put the code, the state code, with what's in the textbook. And he's essentially forcing the state to either get rid of the book or force the editors to edit it. So those are some what can you do and what we mean by that. And then that's I just kind of went from the legislative side to the citizen side. And at the citizen side, we have so many examples. And so I won't ramble on the hundreds of examples, but it's everything from working with your school board, changing textbooks, for instance, to looking at curricula at the individual classroom level. I can just tell you that yesterday I got a text from my son who his teacher made the comment, because they were talking about world religions, that what ISIS does in no way represents Islam, which is an objectively untrue statement. So my son, who knew that that's not true, but didn't really know how to address his teacher and didn't want to be disrespectful, said, can you give me something I can share with him or ask him? And I said, why don't you ask him to tell you, name one thing that ISIS teaches or has done that is not normative and universally accepted and taught Islamic doctrine. And so we're waiting for the response from the teacher. Now I'm out of town right now. When I get back, I'm actually going to go speak to the teacher. Now this is a young, you know, junior high schooler addressing it with a teacher. And it's because his father, me, he reads what I do, he knows what I do, and he's learned it. And he's actually objectively done his own research, and he's, you know, talked to me and asked me questions, asked me tough questions. Like, how do you know this? What about this? What about this? So he's come to realize it is what it is. And when you ask that question, name one thing that ISIS has taught or said that's not normative and universally accepted teachings in Islam. Crucifixion, setting a Jordanian pilot on fire in a cage,
right,
stoning people, beheading people, amputating limbs, all lawful in Islam, all normative, all a part of basic, universally taught doctrines of Islam that they teach to children in U.S. Islamic schools, in Canadian Islamic schools, in Islamic schools in Europe and Asia and the Middle East and Africa. So it's really part of what we're doing is we're getting people to do this. So the education side, there's much more to it, but I want to take a breath and let you poke around and ask more questions.
Well, I want to make sure that it wasn't taken wrong what I said earlier. You know, the fact that you're busy, I think, is indicative of people waking up and wanting this information and not knowing exactly where to go, but then finding you and saying, hey, you've got the information. This is something that is critical for people, not just in leadership or in law enforcement, but in just regular community settings to know. And I would like you to comment on that. Are you seeing Americans, not just law enforcement and not just leaders, but Americans on the whole getting this now and understanding the threat to our country and our republic?
I am. What is interesting is what our team is experiencing, the Understanding the Threat team, and what I am certainly experiencing, especially in the last 6 months to a year. But I would say the last 6 months, it's been noticeable. Two things. One, more people are willing to talk about this in a more truthful way. We see on social media, in the media with certain people, although when I say media, not the mainstream media or what I call traditional media, obviously they're not speaking truth about it. But there are more people like you on radio stations who are talking clearly about it. There are more Americans, and I'll use today's presentation. I was not sure how this would be received because there were a couple people in this. You know, this is a group of less than two dozen people. It was a private luncheon, and I just laid it out for them, and nobody batted an eye. And what the comment I got from almost everybody was, you articulated what I thought was true, but you delivered the message in a way that made all of this make sense in a way that nobody's ever put together for me before. And once you come to understand that the nature of how they're winning this war is by controlling the message, and that they're getting the Marxist leftists, the Marxists in the United States, whether they be in the media or political leadership or in other areas of the community, to include university presidents, military leaders, school boards, to absolutely shut the discussion down about Islam. And I just always ask people, isn't it interesting that the one topic you can't discuss openly is Islam? And you know, pleasant company. That there's only one, I'm going to use the word religion, even though Islam does not define itself as religion. There's only one of these world religions, and I'm putting that in air quotes, one religion that kills you or wants to kill you if you make a comment that's negative about it or anything about it. There's only one world religion that kills you, want to kill you if you draw a picture of its prophet. I mean, there's only one, and everybody knows that, but nobody wants to do anything about it. It's the idea that if I just hold my breath and stay silent, the wolf's going to go by the door. Well, the wolf's already in the house, and we are at a time. Our assessment is we are at a very, very dangerous time. So whatever's happened in the last 6 to 12 months, I think Americans have woken up to it, and they're now willing to not only come to the conclusion, they realize that Islam in some way is related to the problem, that what our leaders have said, from Bill Clinton to George Bush to President Obama to, you know, Mr. Trump's first national security advisor, General McMaster, is untrue. It's objectively untrue, that Islam, that ISIS is not perverting a religion, that Islam teaches what ISIS and al-Qaeda say it teaches, and it does. And again, for your audience, for those who don't understand what Islam is, or you want to relate some individual you know who self-identifies as a Muslim with Islamic teachings are what they are. And there's one Islam. There's one Quran. There's one Muhammad. That's it. And the perfect example in Islam is Muhammad. And he killed people. He tortured people. He married a six-year-old. He said God commanded him to wage war against the non-Muslim world until Islam dominates the world. That's it. And so that's their perfect example. That's all it is. It's not that complicated. What's complicated is digesting that and coming to a point where we can talk about solutions. And we, Matt, you and I, and your audience members and I, can disagree on the way forward and the solution, but we can only have a reasonable discussion if everybody understands the problem and the nature of the problem. So I think what we have seen is many Americans coming to understand. We're certainly seeing it on social media. I mean, I would say millions of Americans understand Islam's the problem. The only people that don't seem to get it are our leaders working in the Pentagon, the DHS, the FBI, the CIA, the DIA, on the National Security Council, President Trump's advisors. They don't seem to understand that. The average American sees it pretty clearly.
I think that that's what's important, is that this should be a campaign issue. This should be one of those questions, hey, are you pro-life, to a candidate? Then the next is, do you understand the threat, right? And what does that mean to you? And who do you believe the threat is? And this should be a campaign issue, because what CARE is trying to do now is quite literally take over Democrat leadership. They've already boasted that they have over 100 members of Congress that are sympathizers or very close associates. Now Nihad Awad comes out and says, we want to make sure that 30, I mean, think about that, sympathizers of CARE are elected to the United States Congress. I mean, what would that impact have for the direction of our country?
Well, it's going to be detrimental. The fact that CARE still exists, that their headquarters hasn't been bulldozed and that leaders of CARE arrested, indicted, and given the maximum punishment as waging war against the United States. I mean, that we should have military tribunals. But that's, you know, to any talk of this, here's the problem. Islam is barbaric, and it has no business in civilized society. The fact that we are coddling it and treating it as if it's just another ideology, that's just another thing we discuss, it's barbaric. If these people were running as cannibals and advocating that we eat people, it wouldn't. What would people say? What if somebody ran for office and one of their two campaign platforms was that we reinstate slavery in America? How well would that go over? But that's what Islam is. Islam promotes slavery. The entire system enslaves people to a barbaric system, and it treats human beings barbarically. Love thy neighbor is not a part of Islam, and yet we are coddling it, and our leaders are such cowards, they won't stand up and say something. It's outrageous. Nihat Awad spoke this last Saturday at the University of Charleston in West Virginia, and when citizens challenged the university president, Martin Ross, about allowing this on a private university campus, the leader of Hamas in the United States being allowed to speak, his response was, well, we're taking security measures to make sure it goes off without a hitch. And the citizens are like, are you a moron? We don't give a crap about Nihat Awad's security. We care about our community's security. And yet when they did the event, Nihat Awad walks into the venue surrounded by Charleston, West Virginia police and the University of Charleston, West Virginia's police department, Eric Smith. That's outrageous. I mean, Americans should be rioting in West Virginia over this, that their University of Charleston, West Virginia would do such a thing. But we treat it like, oh, well, nothing. This is outrageous conduct. And I believe that and Mr. Trump is a great example, the politician who is willing to stand up and speak the truth about this is going to find, depending on where you are, I mean, there are some states that I think are already lost. Certainly portions of some states are gone. The Marxists and the jihadis that own them. But there are plenty, millions, tens of millions of Americans who see the truth and want to defend liberty and this country. And the day that we stop, that local citizens decide we're not going to tolerate this anymore, you bring your crap into our elementary school and make our children wear hijabs and get on their faces and pray to Allah, we're going to drag that principal out of there, and we're going to replace him with someone who actually has a functioning brain, some courage, and some leadership.
John, I really, in the last couple minutes, I want you to comment on Marxism in America. It really appears that Antifa, the John Brown Gun Club, the Redneck Revolt, Socialist Rifle Association are not just recruiting, they're really kind of ramping up for 2020. What are you seeing nationally? What can you share with the audience on that in the last couple minutes that we have?
Well, what we're seeing is that the Marxists at the international level, at the COM intern level internationally, Communist Party International, the Communist Party USA, Freedom Road, socialist organizations, all of them, and all the, you know, the Compaq, the Answer, and those groups like Antifa and others, and there will be more. Here's what I think your audience should probably know more than anything is, number one, at the ground level, the jihadis are working with Antifa. We have evidence that, for instance, Antifa and ISIS and Al-Qaeda operatives have met in Europe and are planning attacks in the United States. We know that the Islamic movement or counterstate and the Marxist movement or counterstate work together here in the United States at the local, state, and national level. And we know that the leading edge of violence is going to be the Marxists. And it will be Antifa, but they'll be replaced with somebody else. And remember the Nazi history, right? The brown shirts were used by Hitler to do a lot of the early dirty work, and then the black shirts came in the night of the long knives, and the brown shirts were all killed. And then, of course, Hitler proclaimed, we've cleaned this mess up, and now we've brought in, you know, more reasonable people, these black shirts, who ended up becoming the SS. Well, the Marxists are the hammer for the jihadis in the U.S., but the thing I think your audience needs to remember that it's the Republican establishment who is the linchpin to all of this. They're the ones who are defending the jihadis, whether they know they are or not. They're the ones who are keeping their mouths shut when we should be speaking up about law, obeying the law, and crushing these people when they come to our towns and start destroying things. The Republican leadership has been grossly negligent, but they're really the key to victory if they turn it around. But this is why we say this has got to be dealt with at the local level. And some communities are going to do it, and some are going to continue to do nothing and ignore the problem until it overruns them.
So, John, if you could, quickly, people that want to get more information, where can they go on the internet? I know, and actually it's more evidence that you guys are effective because you've been deplatformed and banned effectively in places. Where can they go to follow what UTT is doing and also access some of the resources you already have online?
Well, we encourage you to go to understandingthethreat.com and sign up for our newsletter, because then you'll get the newsletter, which will give you links to all the different ways we communicate. We do have a TV show online at WVWTV.com. We just shot some new episodes, and so those are great. We have a radio show every week at worldviewweekend.com/radio, worldviewweekend.com/radio. But understandingthethreat.com, and please go there, get our books, our DVDs. We have free online resources. And if you are able, while we are a corporation, we have a partnered 501c3, and we need resources to continue doing what we're doing, because we are constantly in the battle with the bad guys. But we are putting freedom back on the offensive where it belongs, and we need your help. So thanks, Matt, for having me and let me share all of this.
Absolutely. And I've got 15 seconds. You also have a new book out I neglected to mention, Islam's Deception, The Truth About Sharia. If you could plug that quickly.
Yep, that simply takes Sharia and what it is and how it, the role it plays in this war, and blows it down to a very easy read. And it's been pretty widely acclaimed. And so I encourage people to go to the website and get it. Understandingthethreat.com.
John Guandolo, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio. Once again, keep up the great work, and tell everybody in your organization they're doing a fantastic job for our republic.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Bless you.
All right. John Guandolo, understandingthethreat.com, Islam's Deception, The Truth About Sharia. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.